He left a successful career on Wall Street so he could set the record straight on cable news. He did such a great job that even President Trump noticed and asked for his help. Now, he's become a champion for American nationalism and a proud spokesman for the deplorables. He's Steve Cortez, and this is the Steve Cortez Show on AM 560, The Answer.
Turn up the lights in here, baby.
Friends, we've been talking a lot lately, of course, about the recent events in Chicago and the state of Illinois, the recent really unfortunate events, particularly over the weekend in Chicago, the riot on Friday night in which a lot of people were injured, particularly a lot of Chicago policemen. And thankfully, I think CPD performed very admirably. And the point is, too, not just that they saved a statue. That is important, of course, to save a work of history, a work of art, something that's culturally important to Italian Americans. And it's more important, though, the preservation of order and the fact that the Chicago police, at least, even though our political leaders in the city of Chicago don't have their back, at least the CPD is doing its very best to enforce the rule of law and to make a statement and a point that public order is important and that we will not tolerate rule by mobs and we will not tolerate anarchy and street justice. It's unfortunate, though, that a lot of those forces that are in favor of political power through force are backed by a lot of regular citizens of this country, regular citizens of Chicago, and certainly a lot of very powerful corporations, unfortunately, in our country. So to help me talk about this issue and more, I'm really pleased to welcome back to the show again, friend of the show, Mark Glennon. He's the founder of Wire Points, which I think is one of the best places you can go online for independent analytical information, particularly as it relates to the state of Illinois and the economy and politics of our unfortunately troubled state. Mark wrote an excellent article at Wire Points, and this is the title of it: Dear Black Lives Matter supporters, Chicago's latest riot is on you. And Mark, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me back, Steve.
You bet. So listen, it's a pretty tough article, pretty tough headline, I think appropriately so. But you're pointing out here that while the BLM agitators are, of course, primarily to blame, you're also saying that secondarily to blame, these agitators, these radical Marxists, they could not succeed. They could not have the power and the sway that they're currently having in our society, including the violent riot on Friday night in Chicago, if it were not for an array of supporters out there, some of whom are not exactly stereotypical radicals. These aren't your cookie cutter radicals. These are a lot of folks, for example, who live in wealthy homes in the city or the suburbs who have BLM yard signs. This is a lot of major multinational successful corporations in the United States who are funneling literally hundreds of millions of dollars into BLM coffers. So tell us, please, about what prompted you to write the article and why you think it's important that we acknowledge the complicity of BLM supporters.
Sure. Well, when Black Lives Matter first arose, it was a reasonable impulse. I mean, people were concerned about racial equality and police brutality, and that was the kind of the phrase they gathered behind. And so you can excuse maybe some wrongheaded support for some time, but that's gone now because we now know, and it's crystal clear from all kinds of evidence, that Black Lives Matter, the organization, is a Marxist, anti-Semitic, anti-family, violent organization. Yet the support for them continues. And it's not just the work of the organization Black Lives Matter, including the branch here in Chicago. That branch, by the way, was clearly the organizational center of a planned attack on police, which is what happened last Friday night. And that's why this particular event is important. But it's also the individuals that have their BLM signs in the yards. What are they thinking? Sanity seems to have gone on a respirator. Some of these may be well-intentioned people, but they're just not paying attention to what the organization is about. And some of them say, well, it's the movement that I support. It's just a phrase. I don't know or care about the organization. Well, that's the problem. By supporting the phrase and using that mantra, you are supporting the organization. And that's what gives them credibility. And the version of the events on Friday night, as I wrote it, based on videotapes, because I was watching live as it was happening, shows them clearly as at the center of a well-planned attack. And by the way, that was validated by some additional videos released by the police just yesterday. And so you can see it for yourself. And this is not an organization that anybody should be supporting. This event shows it, and it's a national problem. People continue to rally behind a violent movement intent on an uprising. That's right. Central to the philosophy of Marxism.
Right. And, you know, we're talking with Mark Glennon, the founder of Wire Points. Mark, I think you make an important point because, look, leftists are very crafty. And I think these BLM radicals, they clearly have learned from the Alinsky School of Tactics, his seminal work for radicals, Rules for Radicals is the title of the book. And unfortunately, again, you know, I don't doubt the soundness of their tactics in terms of efficacy. Of course, I completely disparage the ethics of what they're doing. But they have grabbed a hold of and promoted a phrase that no sane or decent person could argue with. Of course, Black Lives Matter, right? I think all America's lives matter. All, for that matter, all human lives matter. But, you know, we could go on and on. But the point is, by picking a phrase, a laudable phrase, and using it effectively as a front for an organization whose goals are anything but laudable, an organization whose goals are literally the destruction of America, the destruction, I could say even more broadly, of Western civilization. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that. But by doing so, I think at first they fooled people, but I guess you're right. I'm not going to excuse people any longer, because even on this show, Mark, I've said a number of times, you know, clearly these are well-meaning people who want racial justice, which is wonderful, right? Who want people to be treated irrespective of their race in this country. That's a very laudable goal. I think it's a goal we've largely achieved in our culture today, by the way. But regardless, I was willing to forgive them because I believed that their motives were good. But at this point, Mark, I'm really no longer to forgive. And, you know, I mentioned a lot that I like to take every night is decent out. I take a long cigar walk through my neighborhood, and I can't tell you how many Black Lives Matter signs I see. And to your point, whereas I used to just sort of dismiss it, I'm starting to get angry at these people. I believe, though, unfortunately for them, it has become an almost tag that they feel within their social circles, their professional circles, that they need to virtue signal that, oh, yes, I'm on board. I'm woke. I care about Black people. I'm putting this sign out. And they're just choosing to not recognize the insane harm that BLM is doing to all of America, but by the way, particularly to Black communities.
Well, as you know, the Black community, I don't think they support this stuff, Steve. Steve, you grew up in the same suburb I did, which was, you know, gradually became integrated while we were there. You knew the working class Blacks that I knew. They don't support this kind of thing. I mean, they're busting their butt trying to keep their jobs, keep their kids in school like everybody else. This has support really only of a probably small portion that is violent and understands the tactics of what is being done here, directly has the support, but it has the inadvertent support of now this large portion of America that has such power. I mean, they do have mob power, and part of the reason why people don't speak up against the Fraser or the organization is because they'll lose their job. I mean, we've seen all kinds of circumstances where people say, all lives matter, that's enough to get you fired from a university or something.
Right. Well, and that's why this cancel culture is so insidious. And as awful as it is, I will say this, as somebody who's fighting as a partisan for the president's reelection, I do think that this cancel culture is creating, and I hate sort of the phrases of, you know, quiet majority or silent majority, because I don't want people to be silent. I want us to speak. We're Americans. But I do think there's a revulsion toward this cancel culture and the idea that one misstep on social media can get somebody fired, even somebody who's not in the public realm, who's not in the public square. And I think you're right. Unfortunately, a lot of people who know the truth about BLM are afraid to speak the truth because we're living in that kind of a toxic cancel culture right now. And the left, again, is very good at intimidation. They're not so good at persuasion, but they're very good at intimidation. But I want to turn to you too. Now, I think it's important that they have this sort of broad support among, you know, particularly, I would say, the educated professional class generally feels a need to ratify the BLM movement, even though I think it's crazy that exists out there. What's important about that trend, I believe, Mark, is that then leads to corporate support, to big business support for BLM. And I think this is where the real power comes from for BLM. So I want to ask you about that, about the, you know, what are the motivations behind massive American corporations, multinationals like Nike and Apple? What are their motivations behind funneling not just their the support of their name and brand, but even more than that, literally, absolutely massive financial support, again, not to improving Black lives, which I, of course, all of us would support in a second, but to this BLM organization. So after that, we're going to take a break. And after that, Mark, I want to ask you about this issue of big business supporting the BLM movement, coming up next. I'm back with Mark Glennon. He's the founder of WirePoints, which, folks, if you aren't familiar with WirePoints, please get familiar with this website and this organization. They put out some of the best analysis out there, particularly as it relates to the state of Illinois and particularly the economy of the state of Illinois, the political and economic situation. They also post a lot of interesting articles from other sources. They're a bit of an amalgamator, but their original content is what really draws me there to their website. I think it's fantastic. A lot of it's written by Mark himself, some by other staff members. And Mark, before we get back to your excellent article on the Black Lives Matter movement and the riot in Chicago. I do want to ask you, because you mentioned in the last break that we, of course, both went to the same high school. We went to Marion Catholic High School in Chicago Heights, in the south suburbs of Illinois. And I wanted to ask you about, and we weren't quite there at the same time because I'm so much younger. Not really, but a little bit, just a little bit younger. No, but Mark, wanted to ask you your favorite teacher. I'm going to put you on the spot, and I didn't give you any warning I was going to say this. So my favorite teacher, who was probably there when you were there, because he taught at Marion for a very long time, was Leo Cleary. And he really taught me to love history. He was just an incredible history buff himself. He so loved his subject matter that it made me love it as a student. And Leo Cleary, I think he retired about 10 years ago, but he taught there for a heck of a long time. I wouldn't be shocked if it was even 50 years. But do you have a favorite teacher that you want to pay homage to here on the air?
I do. Mr. Smith, my junior English teacher, it's there where I read about John Stuart Mill and the origins of the First Amendment, and those have had a lifelong impact on me. That's part of what we're talking about now. You know, a big regret in life is that I never thanked him properly.
Okay. Well, at least you're doing it now, even if it's posthumously, right? So, but in those days, by the way, I was educated by Dominican sisters from K all the way through 12. I went to St. Lawrence O'Toole Grade School in Matteson, Illinois, which sadly no longer exists, has gone out of business, but as it were, I know it's not a business, but you know what I mean? Those Dominican sisters were just unbelievable teachers. And I'm so thankful, by the way, that I received an education that was rooted, you know, like you say, in things like the classics and things like facts rather than narrative. And, you know, now when I went off to college at Georgetown, it was nothing but narrative, and it was a disaster. But what was going on at Georgetown already in the 1980s and 1990s, now that's going on all the way down to the kindergarten level, unfortunately, today. And we're not educating a lot of kids. We're trying to indoctrinate them, unfortunately. But hey, that's another topic for another time, because let's continue with your excellent article at WirePoints. Dear Black Lives Matter supporters, Chicago's latest riot is on you. Now, among the supporters of BLM are massive corporations, Nike, Apple, basically every blue chip corporation you can think of has not just donated to the BLM organization. And again, I'm all for them trying to improve actual Black lives. Absolutely. Through whatever they can do, grassroots organizations, scholarships, you know, all of it, community centers. I'm talking about massive cash handouts to the BLM organization, which in its own manifesto lays out a case to basically destroy everything that makes America America and to destroy Western civilization. So given that, Mark, what do you think is the motivation for these companies to give these kinds of funds to the BLM organization?
Several things, I think, Steve. First, some of it is simply just shakedown money. I mean, they're paying extortion money. It's a protection racket. They don't want to be targeted in the press by any of these people that are so vocal and so sometimes violent, but so effective in getting negative press drawn on people. So they rushed to throw money at Black Lives Matter, which was the most conspicuous organization out there. I think a lot of them didn't do their homework, and the research wasn't published. You know, you've only seen it recently, and most of the regular press, of course, hasn't covered this, but in places like the Federalist and more conservative journals, they've documented it with the facts and the actual videos, statements from the Black Lives Matter founders about how radical and violent they are. But I don't think that was fully known at the time they started throwing money that way. Another part is a lot of those companies were predominantly tech companies, and that is a very woke crowd out there. You know, I used to do investments in that area and knew the people that worked at some of those companies. And the workers there are, again, organized and very insistent that, their companies follow woke rules. So they were pressured into it.
Right. Understood. And by the way, regarding some of the goals, to get specific again here to Chicago, some of the goals of the BLM march that turned into a riot on Friday night, and then you write about this in your article, I'm glad you do. One of the goals of this was supposedly to return a big portion of Chicago, supposedly, to Native Americans. And they even used the term rematriate rather than repatriate, which is sort of funny. I'll at least give them credit for being clever in saying rematriate. So they want to return all of Chicago east of Michigan Avenue to Native tribes. By the way, one good question would be which Native tribe? Because, of course, we know that they conquered each other for centuries before any European ever got to the United States. Or should it be returned to the French, you know, who founded Chicago as far as European settlement goes? You know, the absurdity of this, you know, for example, a lot of people were mad that President Trump on July 3rd gave a July 4th eve. I thought it was a magnificent address at Mount Rushmore in South Dakota. And people pointed out that that was Lakota land that was stolen by the Americans. Now, listen, I'll say to some degree, yes, I mean, the Lakota were conquered by Americans for that land. However, the Lakota hadn't been there very long before the Americans conquered them. They came from Minnesota and they pushed out weaker Native American tribes from there. In other words, once we start going down this ludicrous rabbit hole, we will find out that the entire world was about a conquest for land. And until relatively recent centuries did we decide that borders matter and that it's not okay to simply conquer because you're stronger. So this idea that we are going to give up, and by the way, I don't know what the folks of Streeterville would think about that, but this idea that we're supposed to give up land east of Michigan Avenue, I think this is reflective of the insane extreme radicalism of this group, BLM.
You know, what was sad was Mayor Lightfoot, in her reaction to this, spent the first two paragraphs talking about, oh, she's so sympathetic to the plight of Native Americans and the horrors of colonialism and all the rest. So she sucked up to that message that was part of the organizational scheme for this by Black Lives Matters. I don't know that there were that many Native Americans there that they care about this really. But you know, they needed a little extra messaging, I guess, to pull this off, and it worked. I mean, it worked beautifully. I mean, these tactics, Steve, you know, if you read Marx and Lenin and Engels, much of it is not about philosophy. It's about the tactics of how to overthrow a capitalist system. And, you know, Lenin said the capitalists will sell us the rope that we will use to hang them. You know, that's exactly what's happening here. And these people are studied Marxists. They've said that. The founder of Black Lives Matter said that. And they know what they're doing, and it's working.
Right. No, and unfortunately, all we need to do is take their word for it. Nobody needs to rely on Mark Lennon's interpretation or Steve Cortez's. Listen to the actual words, read the actual words of these leaders. Okay, now speaking of Lord Lightfoot, as I call her, we've gone backwards in terms of lockdown restrictions. She is now saying that bars without food will not be allowed inside. Gyms are going to close down. She's starting to dial it back. Is there any data here in Chicago and in the state of Illinois that justifies such a move?
That's become very controversial, I think. I am now of the opinion, based on data and studies, that it's not the rules that drive people's conduct. It's their individual volition and choice. A big study was done on the University of Chicago by none other than Austin Goolsbee, you know, former Barack Obama economic advisor. And they concluded that only 7% of the change in foot traffic at retail stores and such resulted from the rules as opposed to people's individual fear. Mm-hmm. The study in Wisconsin concluding the same thing. When their rule was thrown out, had no impact. I mean, people's social distance, in other words, based on what they think is right. Okay. And now Lightfoot still has the lakefront closed down, you know, key parts of it at least. Right. That's crazy.
I want to continue this conversation. Sorry to interrupt you, but we just got to take a break here, but I want to continue this conversation about Lightfoot, the lockdowns, and also what it means for the city's budget. More with Mark Glennon of Wire Points coming up next. And we are continuing the conversation with Mark Glennon, the founder of WirePoints. And we're talking about the new lockdowns, or the renewed lockdowns here in the city of Chicago, where Mayor Lightfoot, Lord Lightfoot, is starting to tighten the vise a little bit, particularly on taverns and health clubs. And so, Mark, you were saying that people generally behave not so much according to the rules, but according to their own level of fear, or acceptance of risks that the virus presents. I wanted to ask you about one of the aspects of this in terms of the lockdowns is the finances of the city and the state. The city, particularly for its operating budget, really relies on sales taxes, given how just absolutely depressed the retail economy is of the city of Chicago right now. Even if we were to fully open up, what can you tell us about the city's finances and the city's financial picture here and going forward?
Well, that is, unfortunately, the place where the tax revenue comes from is an area where the rules have an effect. You know, it's restaurant services tax, the hotel tax. Those are major items in what the city lives on, especially during the summer. And those clearly are depressed by shutting down restaurants and the travel ban even, and the violence in the city that, you know, who's going to come to Chicago to visit in the summer anymore.
Right.
Those things are continuing indefinitely. We still have not seen a good, honest estimate of what the true sort of monthly revenue loss is that Chicago is sustaining. I expect that it's going to be just astronomical and far beyond what Lightfoot has hinted at. She's pretty openly said right now that the city's only hope is to get money from the federal government.
Right.
Of course, in her next couple lines, she'll insult Trump and the Trump administration. But
Mark, I think you're exactly right. Unfortunately, far too many Democratic governors and mayors around the country, that is their hope. And I think it's absolutely, I hate to be this cynical, but it's absolutely part of why they insist on shutdowns, even when the data and science don't back it, is they need to elect Joe Biden. If they can depress the economy, if they can keep kids out of school, if they can turn the country's mood so sour that it will not elect Donald Trump, they believe that Joe Biden, and perhaps correctly so, will throw them a massive federal lifeline. But it's an incredibly cynical way to govern. It's really not governing. It's just manipulating people. You know, I want to put this because I think it's important. In one of your excellent articles on WirePoints, I think it's really important to put these things, if you can, in numbers that people can grasp. Because sometimes when we start throwing around billions and trillions, I think people's eyes glaze over. It doesn't mean anything sometimes. But you point out, and this is actually a Moody study that you're citing in one of the articles on your website, that for Chicagoans, the average Chicagoan now, the average household in Chicago has a local and state pension debt of $140,000 per Chicago household. So I think we can think about this in really practical terms. For a lot of working class people, that might roughly be the cost of their house if they live in an affordable neighborhood. So it's like they have a second mortgage, except they don't have the second home. This is literally just the pension debt of the city. And to put it in perspective versus other cities, this LA, which is really poorly run, in the state of California, really poorly run, this is twice as bad as the residents of LA. It's five times as bad as residents of Phoenix. What is your thought about how can we possibly, and not just for the near term, but longer term, how can residents of Chicago have any hope that we can get out of this kind of crushing pension obligation debt?
One way or another, the debts have to be cut. And anybody in corporate finance would see this in a minute, that there's just no way that they're ever going to get paid. It cannot be done all entirely on the back of the pensioners. But it has now gotten so bad and so ridiculous that I, even as a critic of the pensions, which are often excessive in my view, fear that there's not going to be enough even to pay something reasonable to these pensioners. You know, we're talking about 18 or 20% funding for police and fire pensions. You know, that's way beyond hope of ever fixing. It's like going into retirement and ending your work with only 18 or 20% of what you need. Of course, Chicago is already taxed to the max. I think we're past the top of the curve in the sense that any further increases ultimately are going to result in lower revenue because people are fleeing the city for it. So it's really a horrible situation. And at this point, I can't claim to have all the answers. I know the pension reform is part of it, and we've got a list of 30 other reforms or something that the city and the state need to do. Whether that would be sufficient.
And is that on your website, Mark, the reforms that you suggest?
We don't have a one comprehensive article on this, but in the search site, yeah.
Okay. And speaking of that, where should folks go to learn about you and about Wire Points?
Well, if you go to our website, we do have on these topics, we collect not just our own views, but every significant article from state and local and national sources. So you use a little search tool at the top, put in whatever topic you want, and you'll get everything that's been out there for the last 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And we keep our opinions separate on the right. We include opinion, you know, links to stories that are contrary to what we believe in. So you'll find left, right, everything in between it, in there. But
real journalism, what a novel.
We're financial conservatives, so we keep that opinion right. Separate. But
to make sure that your views are separate from the other storytelling. No, I think it's so important. Wirepoints.org, folks, is the website address. I think it's. And by the way, to your point too about that, you know, we can't possibly tax our way out of it at this point, even if we tried. Although I don't doubt they'll try. For example, we have the second highest commercial property taxes of any large city in America. We're second only to Detroit, which is obviously a city in a lot of ways we don't want to emulate. Although unfortunately we are. Only about a minute left here, though, Mark. Want to ask you, Michael Madigan. I think a lot of conservatives are getting very excited. Oh, you know, maybe the walls are finally closing in. Maybe he's going to get indicted. Maybe he's going to be forced to resign, go to prison, whatever it is. And I know this is a big topic for only a minute, but are you optimistic that if he were to go away, things would materially change in Chicago or in Illinois anyway?
It would help, but we don't really know yet, because as Ted Dabrowski, my excellent partner, pointed out in the new article we have up, the basic structure of legalized corruption will remain in place. And by the way, I think it's not at all clear that the feds have the smoking gun on him that they need. Otherwise, they probably would have indicted him. And it's really for just that reason, because he doesn't have to speak and get caught on tape saying anything, because the system is there that shakes people down. Everybody in the state knows that he put it together and knows what's going on.
Right.
But, you know, the hard evidence you need might not be there. And secondly, the next people in waiting may be hardcore progressives.
I was going to say, they might be worse. One thing I will say about Madigan, as corrupt as he is, you know, he's clearly not a leftist. I mean, to them, it's just all about self-interest. It's not about ideology. So in some ways, I think it could potentially even get worse. But let's see. We'll see how things play out. Mark Glenn of Wire Points, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thanks so much, Steve. Take care.
You bet. And up next, folks, a tribute to a fantastic Chicagoan, or at least Chicago area native, and that is Ernest Hemingway. Up next.